Welcome to the Guitar Channel. I'm super happy to welcome you and interview. I am at Allen Hynes' household with Allen Hynes himself.
My palace.
Yeah, Allen, are you surviving today?
Yeah. Surviving? Well, I'm breathing.
Yeah.
That's a good start, I think. Yeah. Hey, which camera do I look in? Does it matter?
Yeah. No. This one would be the main one, but you can look at my beautiful face. It's okay too. Yeah.
But that. I have a blind spot. You know, my eyes. So it's just probably God works in mysterious ways. I can't see anything past this. It's probably a good thing.
Okay.
Anyway, nice to see you guys again.
Yeah,
always.
It's a blast. What's new since our last interview? It was in 2022. So 2 years ago, a lifetime ago.
Well, it was a lifetime ago, yeah. Well, what's happened? I had more surgeries on my eye.
Okay.
Which is a big deal when you get older. So that took me out of commission, kind of. We've been doing gigs regularly at the Baked Potato. I've been writing some new music. We've been trying to push my music on with my record deal, which is a horrible record business story, which I can tell you about if you want to hear about it.
Sure.
It's a sad story.
Yeah.
But basically, the last album that you heard last time you were here...
Yeah, The Good Fight.
Never came out.
Okay.
Because I ended up signing a record deal, and when they finally got around to listening to my music, they decided there was nothing on it that was good for the radio. And I said, well... I don't write for the radio, really. And so they said, well, can you go back in the studio and do something more commercial? So they gave me a very small pittance of amount of money and went back in and recorded a couple commercial things. And it got a lot of airplay. I mean, but only in that smooth jazz world. You know, in the United States, I'm sure you don't have smooth jazz in France, do you?
Not really, no.
Yeah, there's a whole network here. And it's an interesting story because I think it started like back in the 90s when everybody had a computer and everybody could make their own funky drum loops.
Mm.
And every graduate from high school who could play a C major scale and saxophone, who was kind of cute, put out these, you know, music.
Yeah.
And so the radio stations had so many people writing stuff in or sending stuff into play that they formed a company called Broadcast Architecture, which is kind of a screening process. Two guys, and they decide what gets on the radio. So because of it's only two guys, everything sounds alike on American smooth jazz radio, you know. So they tried to fit me into that format because they, as far as the record label, this particular label is concerned, that was the only way I was going to make any money.
Okay.
Was if I got stuff on airplay and then got an agent and then started doing tours. But as it worked out, did my cat poop? Sometimes my cat poops and stinks really bad.
No, that's okay for now.
Because the bathroom's like not so far away. I bet my cat poops. So I'm sure you get that. Hope you get that in the interview. That's really important. Maybe you start smelling something. It's not me.
Well, it's not me either. Right?
Okay. So it's you. So it got a lot of airplay, but I haven't seen any mailbox money, and I haven't really been able to tour because it's not anywhere but smooth jazz, and they haven't contacted the magazines like I used to do. So it's I'm kind of frustrated. So I think the next move is if I don't see some financial reward from my efforts for last year, the next month, the next quarter, then I'm going to try to get out of the record deal.
Okay.
And just release it on my own like I used to do.
Oh, okay.
On CD Baby and get it out there. So if I can do that, that'll be kind of back to normal, I hope. But meanwhile, I've been, I do sessions for people here at my house because I have a decent preamp and some nice mics, and that's all you kind of need. Nothing fancy here. But that teaching, I still do Zoom lessons online.
Yeah.
I've been trying to get my, because you know I had eye surgeries, so I've been trying to get my tennis game back. So I've actually been, you know, playing a lot of tennis, trying to just normalize that. Cause I love tennis a lot.
And you also teach at MI regularly,
still at MI,
right?
Yeah. But it's less and less. They're less. I mean, for what I do, and like what Dean Brown, who just passed away, by the way, which is a really sad thing. He and I were teaching there just a couple hours a week, doing what they call open counseling. What used to be like 2 days, two full days a week, now is like 2 hours for 1 day a week.
Okay.
So it's almost not worth it for me to go in. But I love the students and I love teaching, so that's why I go back there. It's not really for the money anymore. So, I'm just kind of existing, doing sessions, always trying to write some new music, still trying to do my own music, the stuff from the last record. We played the Baked Potato once, probably every month and a half, something like that.
You played like this week. So how was it?
Oh, it was great.
Yeah.
It was really fun. Yeah, it was great to see a lot of new faces there. A lot of people I hadn't seen, people from, you know, who are here for the NAMM show. So a lot of foreigners.
Yeah.
even guys from New York and stuff who had never been, who never seen the band live. So it was really fun to kind of have a new audience for a change. But we did, I think we sold out both sets and it was really lots of fun. I have a great band, and they were all available for the for the gig. Yeah,
excellent. My spy at the Baked Potato told me it was a great show. So
Good. Yeah, I think so. I mean, we had two sets, and the first set I wasn't feeling like I was connecting, but then this happens all the time where I think it's a horrible night. I listen back to it, like, oh, it wasn't bad. Or I think it's a great night. I listen back to it, and it's like, it wasn't so good. And so I don't know anymore. So I try not to go there, but I do. And like the other night, after the first break, during the first break, I was thinking, God, this sucked. I wish those people could see the second, you know, the next. So I had a couple martinis, and the band loosened up, and we all, like, we had the second set was good, I thought. Did you saw both of the sets, right?
Yeah.
And both were great.
See, I'm all messed up in my head.
But the second one, we couldn't. Well, you felt better, I guess, and connected better. But both sets were great.
Well, thank you. Mm. Yeah. The cute girls left the first set, though. That really pissed me off. There were a couple of cute girls, and that's like, dang, it's not doing something right. But anyway.
What about the NAMM show? Have you been to the NAMM show? Did you see some interesting stuff?
No interesting stuff. But I saw some interesting people.
Okay.
That's always the case, isn't it? That's what the best thing about the NAMM show is just being able to, the best thing about the NAMM show is to see old friends that you haven't seen in a long time, and just the people watch, because it's like, I think there's some people there, I can't believe they dress like that every day. You know,
I'm sure they don't.
I think they wait till that time of year and they go there, just, it's like Halloween, you know, it's like for them. But it's always fun to hear some new stuff. I mean, I was given a couple Chinese guitars by a friend of mine, and but I did get a couple Godan guitars, which are really nice, which I'm going to get in the next couple of days. Actually, one of the distributors, the guy who works for Godan, lives around the corner from me, up on near Joe Bonamassa.
Okay.
Very close to here. So I'm going to go pick them up tomorrow, the next day. But
and do you feel those big events are still relevant or useful, or it's just things from the past?
Well, for me, it's useful just because it's good for contacts, and I always see somebody and make some new friend and get some new endorsement. I mean, I pretty much get everything I want these days. I mean, I got the strings and guitars. I'm picky. I just get them myself. I have an exotic endorsement, so Exotic makes some great guitars, by the way. Some of their new stuff, I think, is better than any of the stuff has ever been, the Exotic guitars. And they're taking me to Japan, so it was good to see them. But, you know, there's always... Because I'm a little bit known in the guitar world, there's always somebody who wants me to hear their new invention.
Yeah.
Sometimes, I mean, more than not, it's like they're trying to reinvent the wheel, and it's kind of just the same old stuff again, you know. Mm-hmm. But every now and then, there's something that's pretty cool.
Did you get some weird stuff too?
I got a I got a soy dish for soy sauce.
Okay.
That was kind of weird. I wasn't expecting that one.
Is that part of your pedal board? No.
Yeah, part of my pedal board. Yeah, it's inside my my special sound. Yeah. But I got that, and I got one place gave me like four guitar straps that I'll never use because I kind of have one strap with my strap locks. I use it with all my guitars. So if anybody out there wants an Allen Hynes signature guitar strap, purple, I'll send it to you. Yeah,
thank you.
But no, the main thing about it is I see old friends, and it's always good to connect with old friends, you know. And I love it. I mean, it's funny because I hate going to the NAMM show because it's like an hour away from Los Angeles and parking sucks and it's expensive and then you got to walk. But once you're there, man, it goes by fast, right? Yeah, the day goes by like that. All of a sudden the day's over. And then at the end of the day, it's like, boy, I'm kind of glad I went because I saw so-and-so and I saw so-and-so. Mm. So it's the NAMM show. It's what it is, you know. It's too bad that the bigger companies aren't there, you know, like Gibson and Fender and stuff. Yeah.
The place where we did record our first interview, Alan, you know, so I'm sure it's
ledge.
A beautiful memory for you.
Well, of course, I cry when I walk past that place.
All right, let's talk about The Good Fight, or eventually we hope that this album is going to be released. I would like you to tell us how you usually compose. Do you start with a melody in your head, a chord progression, and then maybe pick an example from a tune and walk us through the process.
Everything kind of like starts something. You know, if you play one chord, sometimes I'll just play one chord and say, this is a cool chord.
Okay.
And then you want to get something going on that, so you put a loop to it and all of a sudden, oh, this is cool. Mm. Sometimes you hear a cool groove and you go, this is a cool groove. I don't have a song like this in my repertoire. I need to have this groove. Sometimes it's like, my phone is like just filled up with old ideas. I'll tell you what, I had this idea, which I'm going to make into a song. This is a nice little intro, like a... Um, beautiful. So that might be something.
Okay.
So I came up with that the other day. I was going, I got to squeeze that in someplace. So I'm going to try to put it into a song. I was writing this Stratocaster. I had this idea. These are new ideas. Mm. And this is how I work. I'll just get like a... Races, right? So I have this like kind of a motif, and it's kind of I'm letting the top note be the voice melody. Usually, you know, like I could have gone. So it's hit or miss. I mean, sometimes I'll just one little two chord connection will just mesmerize me. The other day it was almost like a Pat Metheny-ism. And it's nothing, but it just felt so good to me. I said, I got to get that in someplace because I just want that feeling. So I think if you just play enough, and I do this late at night, I'm sitting around by myself with a glass of wine or martini or something, I'll just play something. If I get on one little passage that just kind of hits me, I don't know what it is, but it's just something that hits. I'll try to make something out of it, you know, because I want to recreate. The thing is, I want the listener to get that same feeling, right?
Which and is, you record whatever you play, and then after that, you go through it?
Yeah, I put them down on my phone. I've got, like, I must have 500 ideas on my phone that are just little short things, you know. And then I dig them out, and sometimes I go through, I'm sitting on an airplane or I'm going someplace where I can really listen to them all. I'll, like, you know, get rid of the ones that are nothing. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I wake up in the middle of the night and have an idea. I keep a guitar next to my bed, or I'll just speak into I go, okay, you know, I'll go, la, 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 la. Not quite that. But I'll say, like, you know, I'll get an idea for an ending for one of my songs. Like, there's some songs I get stuck on. I have one song that's I don't know where to go with that.
Okay.
So I've had this like stuck, and so the other night I woke up in the middle of the night and I said, oh, what if I did this and this? I kind of sang into it, and so I just remember the idea.
Okay.
It's like a dream, you know, if you get an idea and you just don't put it into a library of some sort, you're going to forget it in a half an hour.
Mm. And what about an example from The Good Fight, from the album? Do you remember the historic process for one of the specific tune?
Yeah. There's, let me change guitars really quick. There's, I can do it on. I did it on an acoustic guitar, actually. So my assistant will take me. I like drop D tuning because drop D tuning is it gives you nice rich chords. You know, things that you normally. So that's always fun to kind of mess around with tunings, and I like. I mean, acoustic guitar was meant for drop D tuning. It just sounds so rich with this regular chords. So I had an idea in open counseling at MI. I was just sitting by myself, and there weren't any students in there going. And so I had that kind of like a little intro, and then I brought the band and went into like a. I'm probably
practice before you guys got here.
So anyway, I wanted like an open kind of jazzy intro, which is that whole I just kind of a Rikuder jazzy intro by itself was the idea. And then I bring the whole band in with vocals and some slide guitar to do this song called Quietly Go. And so that's what was the question?
Yeah. The question was have the history basically of one of the tune of the starting from the initial idea until what you have on the record.
I got you. Yeah, I remember now. Well, this particular song was like two different songs, mm-hmm. and I put them together because they were both kind of fit. It seemed like that one kind of needed an intro, so I can actually play it for you, or maybe you can probably splice this in later on. You can maybe put the song in there.
Sure, I can add it, yeah.
Yeah, it's called Quietly Go, and you can hear what I'm talking about. And then he goes to a part, and I had my friend, you know, certain songs, there will be little places that need a little more dramatic something to them, and I'm just hearing vocals. So I had a friend who's really a Brazilian cat named Rogério Jardim put some vocals in the middle of it for me. So, and this is one of those songs. And here it is. Now I'm playing it correctly. Myself, I realize that a lot of my songwriting, and it's, people have pointed this out to me lately, it's almost like a pop song. A lot of my songs have an intro, a verse.
Yeah, which is good.
Yeah. And then a second verse and a bridge and then right into a hook, you know, which is not the way all artists, you know, jazz musicians especially write, you know. Mm. But when I look back at my songs, they're kind of, well, I realize my influences as a human being, the earliest stuff I listened to were Beatles songs. You know, it could be more pop than Beatles and better. So that's really where a lot of my approach and direction comes from. I think even with my fusion stuff, there's always a form to it like that. It's different than like an Alan Holdsworth record, you know. Mm-hmm. There's usually a simple form. And another thing, I used to kind of think, for a while there, I was thinking that my music was not as good. I'm not as good, but not as worthy as some jazz guys, because I realize that my stuff's not really harmonically super deep all the time. There's always little twists to it that people always, you know, get surprised by. But I don't try to write difficult. Mm-hmm. I don't sit there and go, man, that's not quite.
That's too simple. Let's add some more crazy chords.
Yeah, let me add another flat nine in there somewhere. I mean, I know what it is, but I don't. My ear gravitates more towards. I'm happy. Let me put it this way. My cat, hey boo, what's up, dude? I'm constantly through life humbled by guitar players who can play really super simple stuff really well.
Yeah,
let me put it that way. Mm. Like when I sit down, I hear like there's guys like Michael Landau or Val McCollum or Rikuder, or you know, so they're playing stuff all the time. It's not deep harmonics. If you want to go, oh my gosh, I've never heard that before. That's impressive, I guess, in its own way. But it's also impressive to me when they can make hit your heart and affect thousands of people with one nice chord movement. That's really special to me.
Yeah.
And that's like actually a challenge I give my students sometimes. I tell them, I said, okay, you can write a song with 20 different chord changes, but try to write me a nice song that only has like three or four chords in it. And that's much more of a challenge to make it, you know, without it sounding corny or stupid. Mm-hmm. You know, happy birthday. I don't want it to be happy birthday, but but you want, you know, I'm saying, like the Beatles songs, like a lot of this stuff is just like two or three chords, and it's just like, it's wonderful because the combination of the melody and the lyrics and the, you know.
Can you switch back to electric? I have a couple of questions regarding your solo playing and so on. Regarding your solo playing, there are some great guitar playing, great solo playing in the album. So do you work in advance on your solo? Do you have a couple of ideas? Is it always improvised?
I always improvise the first time through. You know what I mean? Like if there's some difficult chord changes, I kind of hear where they should go. So usually my instincts are good the first time through, but I'll fix them as time goes. I mean, I, you know, first time through, it's, you're always inspired, and the shape, the contour of the solo is kind of there. I'm pretty good at doing that right off the bat.
Okay.
Building from nothing and making it work through the changes. I know the concept of building a good solo. I don't always do it, but so I let it roll. Like when I did the when I recorded the band live, I recorded myself, but I was really more there just to get their performances down, you know. So I was just directing them, and I wasn't really cared about it. And then I came back here and did most of my guitar solos. There are a few of them that were like first time through on the record. I think on the song "Tempest in a Teapot," where I do like a really weird, like a Steve Vai-esque type of solo where I go. That was a first time through. I got lucky. But the other ones are pretty much, you know, the contour of them is like on a Slither. That's a pretty nice, there's some nice chord changes you get to like work through. And I, you know, kind of had the general idea, the contour, where it gets fast, where it gets slow, where it goes high, where it goes low on the guitar. But the details to make it really good were worked out later.
And are you able to come up to show us what is the really the DNA of Allen Hynes soloing?
The DNA is Xanax and martinis, baby. Okay. No, I'm kidding. I quit Xanax long ago, but the martinis are kind of hard to give up.
Okay.
But everything in moderation. DNA, well, you can say so much with one... You can say so much with really simplicity, and that's another thing. It's like when I think about the greatest guitar solos, soloists, in my mind, it wasn't because they were fast. I mean, Alan Holdsworth, of course, had such blinding, beautiful technique that it was impressive. But really, if you listen to a lot of his earlier stuff, it's like he was super melodic too. He doesn't get enough credit for being that guy, and. To me, it's like when I listen to old Tony Williams stuff with Alan Holdsworth on it, or some of Alan's records like Metal Fatigue, he had really melodic ideas. But I always gravitate towards Jeff Beck. I love Duane Allman on A Good Night, because the Allman Brothers, they were jam bands. They were, and like he and Hendrix, those guys, there was a lot of drugs involved back then. So you sometimes in the bootleg tapes, you kind of go, huh, really? But some of them were, you know, you could tell what they're going for. They were still going for the grace. Like on Layla, the end of Layla by Eric Clapton, you know, where Duane Allman's playing all that slide stuff. It's beautiful, but it's, if you listen to it close, it's pretty out of tune, you know. But, you know, what the hell? They were all coked up and they were all having fun in the studio. But it was still that really emotion that came through. So I've always, I realized long ago, that you could attract more listeners and you can get people's interest better if you just said something interesting that was very simple. You know, and I don't mean, there are certain things that drive me crazy about guitar players that I try not to do with my playing. One thing is vibrato drives me crazy when people have a really real fast vibrato. Drives me nuts for some reason. It's just, you know, say my mother taught English for a while, and she used to point out when people would use phrases to fill in because they couldn't think of anything to say. So they'd say, you know, they say, you know, they go, you know what I mean? So they'd be talking about something, you know, so they'd say this and you know, they'd say, hey, you know, like, and then what you notice at once, this is like, shot, you know? So this is what I noticed. Like a lot of guitar players who have a Stratocaster do this, they'll play the chord, they go. And once I notice that, it's like, drives me crazy. And even some of the greater, I don't want to mention their names, but some of the guys go, like they're just doing it out of a nervous habit because they have nothing else to do. It's like a nervous tic. It just drives me nuts. Cause I like to use vibrato for, you know, every now and then for a little sweeping into a chord and maybe a little bit, you know, that kind of stuff to me. And maybe I'm at the, maybe it's cause I liked Wayne Shorter too much too. He never used much vibrato. Sometimes you just go, but like a voice, I like to make it like, I hit a lot of notes like that with no vibrato, and then I'll put just a little shake on it. Like a voice would do. It doesn't always have to be. It just sounds like. Anyway, so things like that. I do. There's a lot of. Somebody else pointed this out. A lot of chords that I play, I'll just kind of wiggle one finger of the chord.
Okay. The rest is fixed.
The rest is fixed. And it gives you almost like a little chorus sound.
Yeah. Sounds great.
Yeah, you know.
It sounds easy, but I mean, it sounds
me
beautiful.
Martinis. I'm yeah. really, I mean, after you have a few martinis, I'm yeah. much better. And I do a lot of, I mean, I get bored with myself easily.
Okay.
So I try to always, like, try to throw something in there, you know, a little different than other people do. Which is flattering. It's flattering when I hear another guitar player who's influenced by me. I can hear them playing my licks. And it's not like I have licks. I mean it's like little things I do. Like a, it's like a weird little, I don't know where I came up with it. It's just a little kind of little chromatic approach you can do to stuff that I do all the time. And I heard this one guy in Japan, after I'd been to Japan tour, this guy played with me, and then he put out a solo record, and he had like three or four things that I really said, oh, that's
me.
What I do. That's my. Can I sue? That's okay. It's flattering. But I don't know, man. You know, I mean, the best compliment I ever get is when somebody says, you know, they heard one note and knew it was me, for better or for worse. That's kind of nice, you know. Mm-hmm. Or that their song meant a lot to them. You know, that yeah. The older I get, that means more than whether I'm the, you know, the solo that broke the internet, mm-hmm. like something Rick Beato would say. You yeah. know. Who cares, Rick?
Yeah,
I'm kidding. Who cares if it's fast? No, I love Rick. He's
there is a song called.
The